I invite you to take your Bible tonight, open them up to the book of Obadiah. Obadiah. I've been thinking about, should we go ahead and study the rest of the minor prophets? We've studied two of them. Adam was telling me, I told him we'd studied Hosea. I couldn't remember when. He said it was back in the early 90s. Of course, we just finished up a study on Jonah. And so I thought, at least for the rest of the summer, we'd spend some time looking at some of the rest of them. I've got Adam scheduled to teach on Wednesday nights every fourth or fifth week, and so with the 3 or 4 weeks in between, I should be able to cover another of the minor prophets. And so we're going to do the other 10, starting with Obadiah. And the reason I'm starting with Obadiah, it's because most people think his was the first of the minor prophets the books of the minor prophets that were written. So we're going to look at the rest of them in chronological order. And so next week, and we'll do the book of Joel, and then Hosea's after that, and I think Jonah's after that. So we've done two of the first four. We'll do the others, and then we'll take them in chronological order as opposed to how they appear in the Bible. And of course, we study the minor prophets. Now, I don't know about you, but when I get to the prophets and then the minor prophets, I really have to, how can I say this? I have to be awake when I read my Bible. You know, it's not, I can read the Gospels, and I can read the first books of the Old Testament, and I can read most of the New Testament, and they speak to you. I mean, when you're not alert, okay? But when I read the major prophets and the minor prophets, I got to really be paying attention. Maybe you're different than me, but I got to really be paying attention. And I found that the books that I have a hard time getting anything out of when I read them, when we spend some time studying them together, they become more real to me. And the next time I read them, it's sort of like reading Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, because we've studied them. I mean, you know the context of it, and you know how, you know what the author is talking about and what he's prophesying against, and those sorts of things. But we study the minor prophets, we read the minor prophets, just like we do the rest of the Bible, to learn more about God, because you see, He hasn't changed. And in the minor prophets and in the major prophets, and really the whole Bible, we learn about God. We learn how He deals with His own people, especially when they go into sin. And then we learn how He deals with sinful nations, nations that pay no attention to Him. And so God hasn't changed. He's the same, always will be. And so as we learn about how He dealt with His people, we can pick up how He will deal with us. As we learn about how He deals with sinful nations, we will learn how He will deal with sinful nations today. And so, as we go into the study of some of these books that maybe are not as familiar as others to us, just keep that in mind. I mean, God hasn't changed the way He's dealt in the past. He'll deal going forward. And I would just remind you tonight that a prophet is one that speaks for God. The words of a prophet are not his words. They are the words that God puts in his mouth. And they can relate to the past. They can relate to the present. They can relate to the future. But they come from God. And I think the best example of that and the best example of a prophet is given in the book of Exodus when God called Moses. And you remember Moses said, well, you know, I can't talk very plain. Why don't you just get somebody else to do it? And God came to Moses and He said, now look, Aaron is going to become your spokesman. It says in Exodus 4, verse 16, he shall be to thee instead of a mouth. In other words, he'll be your mouth. You'll tell him what to say, and he will say it. And then it says in Exodus chapter 7, verse 1, Aaron thy brother shall be thy prophet. And so here's what God told Moses. He said, Moses, I'll tell you what to say. You'll tell Aaron what to say, and Aaron will be like your mouth. He will speak your words, which are really my words. And that's what all the prophets in the Old Testament are. They are spokesmen for God. They are God's mouth. They speak God's words. And so Obadiah was one of them. He's fourth in biblical order, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah. But we're going to study him first, like I mentioned, because most people think that his was the first book written. Shortest of the minor prophets, just one chapter. And I thought I'd just throw a little Bible test in tonight for you. There's five books altogether in the Bible that only have one chapter. Obadiah is one of them. What are the other four? We got Obadiah, you got Philemon, you got 2nd and 3rd John, and then you got Jude. All five of those books just have one chapter. And this, again, is the shortest of the minor prophets, the only one with one chapter. It's only got 21 verses in it. And as you study, you can divide it up into two parts. The first 16 verses talk about the destruction of Edom. Now, Edom was those descendants of Esau, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And then verse 17 through 21, deals with the salvation of Israel. So those two parts, the destruction of Edom and the salvation of Israel. And so as we go through the 21 verses, which we'll do real quick, and then I got something I want to throw in at the end that I ran across as I was studying that I never had thought about before that to me was just pretty neat. And I just wanted to share that with you as we close tonight, and I think I'll have time to do it. But as we go through the 21 verses, I want you to look for these four lessons that we can learn from Obadiah. We're reminded in the book of Obadiah that pride is deceitful and goeth before a fall. Pride, our pride deceives us, and it leads to a fall. I mean, it's a biblical truth. It's taught over and over and again in the Bible. And I'll be honest with you, as I've read the book of Obadiah, I've never noticed that before. But as it was pointed out to me, I'm sure every time I read it now, I will be reminded that pride goeth before the fall. Here's another truth, second truth. When one shares in the spoils of wrongdoing, even though he may not be the instigator of the crime, if he shares in the spoils, he becomes as one that instigates the crime. Okay? So if you're standing by, here, let me just give you an example. If you're standing by and you see somebody rob a bank, and as they're coming out of the bank, they drop a bag of money, and you go over and pick up the money, you are a bank robber. You say, well, I didn't rob the bank. It doesn't matter. You shared in the spoils of the crime, and you become as the one who has instigated the crime. We're going to see that tonight in the book of Obadiah. You say, that's a way out example. Yep, but that's the easiest one I could think of. I'm sure it applies to other areas of life. If I thought about it some more, I could give you, and you may be able to think of one. Third thing, as a people sow, so will they reap. Again, a biblical principle that's taught over and over. We'll see it in the book of Obadiah. And then number four, in time of divine judgment, God always provides a way of escape. I mean, again, that's taught over and over in the Bible. We see it in the story of Noah. We see it in the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. We're going to see it in the prophecy that Obadiah made tonight. And so as we go through the book, just keep your eyes peeled and your ears open to see if you can see those four truths. I'll bring them out as we go through, but be on the lookout for them. So let's start in verse 1, the vision of Obadiah. Thus saith the Lord God concerning Edom, we have heard a rumor from the Lord, and an ambassador is sent among the heathen. Arise ye, and let us rise up against her in battle. So it's a vision, again, the words of the Lord, and it says there in that second phrase, thus saith the Lord God. So Obadiah had this vision. He got the word of the Lord. And by the way, the name Obadiah means servant of Jehovah, and that's about all we know about Obadiah. And some of the other prophets, like in Jonah, for example, Jonah's father's named. Here, we don't know who Obadiah's father was. We don't know where he came from, like we did in the study of Jonah. He just comes on the scene. Obadiah, who had this vision, who got the word of the Lord concerning Edom. And again, Edom was a people that descended from Esau. You remember Isaac had two sons, Esau the oldest, Jacob the youngest. And before they were born, God, as it tells us in the Bible, God chose Esau, even though he was the firstborn, not to be the one that would get the blessing. But he went to Jacob. Did I say Joseph before? He went to Jacob and said, even though he's the youngest, he's going to get the blessing. And we know the story. I mean, we know that Jacob, for a pot of stew, bought Esau's birthright. And the birthright was, in their case, because there was two sons, the birthright, the one that had the birthright, would get a double portion of the inheritance. So Jacob would have got 2/3, Esau would have got 1/3. Also, being part of the birthright meant that you were in the lineage of Christ. And so you go back and you look at the descendants of Christ, and you won't see Esau mentioned there. You will see Jacob mentioned there. And so the Edom that's talked about in this verse is the descendants of that Esau. We also know that Jacob tricked Isaac out of the blessing. You remember, with the help of his mom, Isaac had told Esau, go out and kill me some deer. I'm going to eat, and I'm going to bless you before I die. And Rebekah heard that, and she said to Jacob, who, by the way, was her favorite. You remember, Esau was Isaac's favorite because he loved to eat of his venison. And Jacob was more of a homebody, and so he was Rebekah's favorite. And by the way, you shouldn't have favorites. You shouldn't have favorites when it comes to your kids. You ought to love them all the same. And that's not part of the lesson. I just throw that in. Love them all the same. But you remember when Isaac said that to Esau, Rebekah called Jacob and said, hey, go get a couple goats. And I don't know how you can make goat meat taste like deer meat. I guess you can by the spices that you put on it. Go get me a couple goats. I'll cook them like your dad likes them. And we'll send you in to get the blessing from your dad. And Jacob said, but my brother's a hairy man. I don't have much hair. I'm smooth. And his mom said, don't worry about that. We'll take the goat skins and put them on the back of your neck and on your hands. And when your dad feels you, he'll think you're Esau. And that's exactly what happened. Jacob stole Esau's blessing. And you remember, after he did that, Esau said, and he said it out loud, he said it to somebody, because word came back to his mother, well, as soon as dad dies, I'm going to kill my brother. I'm going to kill Jacob for stealing my birthright, although he sold it, and for stealing my blessing. And that was when Rebekah sent Jacob to live with her brother Laban. I don't know for sure, but as I read the book of Genesis, I don't think she ever saw Jacob again. I think she died before Jacob came home. He was gone over 14 years. And it talks about Jacob still being alive when he comes back, but we hear nothing else about Isaac still being alive when Jacob comes back, but we hear nothing else about Rebekah. So the people that Obadiah had this vision about were the descendants of Esau. Now, by the way, when Jacob did come back, Esau went out to meet him and had, I think, if I remember the number right, 300 men with him. And Jacob has sent his servants ahead and said, hey, go see how I'm going to be received. And they came back and said, well, he's coming to meet you, and he's got 300 men with him. And Jacob thought, boy, he must still be mad. He's going to kill me. But that's not how it worked out. I mean, Esau actually hugged him and forgave him. Jacob had sent him some presents, some animals, and Esau said, I don't need them. God has blessed me as well. But Jacob persisted, and he finally took them. And then when they got back home and the land was not able to bear them both, it was Esau that moved away. Even though he had stayed there all the time, it was Esau and his family that moved away and let Jacob stay there where the family was. And so this was the people that Obadiah had this vision around. They were the descendants of Esau. Now, I want you to notice that verse says, we have heard a rumor. Rumor, that word doesn't mean the same thing as we think about rumor today. It means a report. In other words, we have heard a report from the Lord. And an ambassador or a messenger is sent among the heathen. And again, the heathen means all the other nations. If you weren't part of Israel, you were a heathen. And so when it says heathen there, again, it's not the same way we would use the word as somebody that has nothing to do with God. It just means everybody else. So a messenger is sent to all the other nations. Arise ye and let us rise up against her, Edom, in battle. In other words, a message came from God to all the nations. Come, let's rise up in battle against Edom, the descendants of Esau. Verse 2. Behold, I have made thee small among the heathen, among all the other nations. Thou art greatly despised. Now, we're going to see in verse 3 that Edom was a very proudful nation. And God said, in spite of your pride, I, God, will make thee small among all the nations, and you're going to be greatly despised of all the other nations. Not going to show you any mercy. They're going to come and destroy you. And again, we're reminded, it's God that sets up nations and God that takes nations down. Nations don't rise by themselves. They rise because God lets them rise. And nations fall because God takes his hands of blessing off them. A nation whose God is the Lord, according to the psalmist, is a nation that is blessed. Blessed is a nation whose God is the Lord, Psalm 33. But a nation who turns away from God not only loses the blessing of God, but risks the wrath of God. Huh? Not only do they lose the blessings of God, they risk the wrath of God. Look at verse 3. The pride of thine heart hath deceived thee. Thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rock, whose habitation is high, that saith in his heart, who shall bring me down to the ground? It says, the pride of thy heart hath deceived thee. You know, if you think too highly of yourself for very long, pretty soon you're going to start to believe it. Huh? Now just think about that. If you think of yourself too highly for very long, pretty soon you're going to believe that it's true. Huh? That's what happened to Edom. They said, and by the way, let me just tell you, they lived in an area that's south of the Dead Sea, a very mountainous place. In fact, the city of Petra, the rock city, is in this place. Petra was a city that they thought no enemy could take. It was built into the side of the mountain. There was only one way in, and you could put guards, and it was like through a valley. And in order to get there, I mean, if you were defending Petra, you would put your armies on top of the hills that were over that one way in, and it was nobody could penetrate it. And so for a while, it was the capital of Edom. And so they said, who shall bring me down to the ground? I mean, they said as a people, who can defeat us? Nobody can. Let's go on to verse 4. Though thou exalt thyself as the eagle, they lived high in these mountains, so they rose up to the place of eagles, and though thou set thy nest above the stars, more figuratively than in actuality. But again, they lived high. And they said, well, I mean, we might as well live in the stars. There's nobody that can cast us ground. But God says, thence will I bring thee down, saith the Lord. He says, you may think that nobody can break into your city and destroy you. You may think because you're as high as an eagle and make your nest with the stars that nobody's going to be able to come in. But let me tell you something. I'm God. And if I choose to bring you down, I can bring you down. Then the next few verses talks about how complete the destruction will be. Verses 5 and 6. If thieves come to thee, if robbers by night, how art thou cut off? Would they not have stolen till they had enough? If the grape gatherers come to thee, would they not leave some grapes? How are the things of Esau searched out? How are his hidden things sought up? Now, what Obadiah is saying in those two verses is, now look, when robbers come to you in the middle of the night, they don't take everything you got. They fill up their bag. They take as much as they want, but it's not usual for them to take everything in the house. They get enough, and then they leave. Same thing with people that gather grapes. They don't pick every grape in the vineyard. They fill up their bucket or they fill up their bag. They don't search under every leaf to make sure they get every single grape. But God said, when I send the destroyers into Edom, they're going to search out your hidden things and they're going to take everything you got. They're going to leave nothing behind. Your destruction is going to be complete. Verse 7, all the men of thy confederacy have brought thee even to the border. The men that were at peace with thee have deceived thee and prevailed against thee. They that eat thy bread have laid a wound under thee. There is none understanding in him. What he's saying there is all the people that you've had alliances with, your neighbors that you've had treaties with, they're going to turn against you. When this destruction comes, they're going to be actually part of the force that comes in to destroy you. Where it says there, they've laid a wound under these. Talk about laying a trap for you. And you won't even know it. They've laid that wound, but there's none that understand it. You won't see it when it comes. Verse 8, shall I not in that day, saith the Lord, even destroy the wise men out of Edom and understanding out of the mount of Esau? And thy mighty men, O Teman, shall be dismayed to the end that every one of the mount of Esau may be cut off by slaughter. God says, I'm going to destroy your wise men. I'm going to destroy your men of understanding. I'm going to destroy your mighty men. Everyone in the mount of Esau is going to be cut off. God said the destruction that's coming is going to be complete. There's going to be nothing left. Now, here's why. He tells us why. Verse 10, for thy violence against thy brother Jacob, shame shall cover thee, and thou shalt be cut off forever. I'm going to destroy you because of what you did to Jacob. I'm going to destroy you because of what you did to Israel. And I'm going to cut you off forever. In the day, verse 11, in the day that thou stoodest on the other side, in the day that the strangers carried away captive his forces, and foreigners entered into his gates, and cast lots upon Jerusalem, even thou wast as one of them. What God was saying is, hey, you didn't start it, but when others came, when other nations came up against Israel, and by the way, most of the time, they came against Israel because God was punishing them. He sent nations against Israel because they turned away from God. Esau was standing by. They didn't start it, but they saw what happened. They saw the nations that entered into Israel. They saw that they were carried away captive. They saw that their wealth was carried away. And you stood there. You watched it happen. You didn't instigate it. But you became as guilty as those that did. Then you went further in verse 12. But thou shouldest not have looked on the day of thy brother in the day that he became a stranger. Neither shouldest thou have rejoiced over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction. Neither shouldest thou have spoken proudly in the day of distress. Here's what they did. As Edom saw these other nations come into Israel, they stood there and they gloated over their defeat. They urged the enemy on, rah, 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 give them what they deserve. They rejoiced over their destruction. And they said, look what's happening to them. It will never happen to us. Looks what's happening. You know, I can't help but think about our country. You know, for a long time, we were the wealthiest nation on earth. And I'm sure, you know, there were times that people thought, boy, look at how the mess the rest of the world in. It can never happen to us. But there's a God in heaven. He raises up nations and he takes down nations. And it all depends on how those nations turn and worship him. Verse 13, thou shouldest not have entered into the gate of my people in the day of their calamity. Yea, thou shouldest not have looked on their affliction in the day of their Thou shouldest not have entered into the gate of my people in the day of their calamity. Yea, thou shouldest not have looked on their affliction in the day of their calamity, nor have laid hands on their substance in the day of their calamity. In other words, they went in and got the leftovers. When the enemy left, even though they didn't start it, they said, well, they've left some, we'll go in and get it. They took of the spoil of Israel. And God said, that's why I'm going to destroy you. You didn't start it, but you're just as guilty as the people that did. You rejoiced in their defeat. You went in and took their goods. And then verse 14, neither shouldest thou have stood in the crossway or the crossroads to cut off those that did escape. Neither shouldest thou have delivered up those of his that did remain in the day of distress. You blocked the escape routes. And those people that were coming out of Israel to escape the destruction, you caught. You robbed. You took captive and sold them as slaves. And for all of this, I am bringing this punishment upon you. And he makes a statement in the next couple of verses. Just like you've sowed, so shall you reap. For the day of the Lord, verse 15, for the day of the Lord is near upon all the heathen. As thou hast done, it shall be done unto thee. Thy reward shall return upon thine own head. For as ye have drunk upon my holy mountain, so shall all the heathen drink continually. Yea, they shall drink and shall swallow down, and they shall be as though they had not been. You went into Israel and drunk on the holy mountain. Now the enemy's going to come in and drink on your holy mountain. They took away all the wealth. Now somebody's going to take away all your wealth. And in that last phrase, what he's saying is, you're going to be wiped off the face of the earth. It's going to be like you never existed. Like you've never been. So the destruction that's coming is going to be a complete and total destruction. And it comes because of what you have done to my people, to the nation of Israel. Verse 17. But upon Mount Zion shall be deliverance. Here's the escape. But upon Mount Zion shall be deliverance, and there shall be holiness, and the house of Jacob shall possess their possessions. Israel's got to be punished, but they won't cease to exist. My people have to be punished for what they've done in turning away from me, but they will turn back to me, and they will possess their possessions. They'll get back what they had. Verse 18, and the house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Esau for stubble. Fire burns stubble. And they shall kindle in them and devour them, and there shall not be any remaining of the house of Israel, for the Lord hath spoken it. Again, he was going to completely destroy them. And they of the south shall possess the mount of Esau, and they of the plain of the Philistines, and they shall possess the fields of Ephraim, and the fields of Samaria, and Benjamin shall possess Gilead. And the captivity of this host of the children of Israel shall possess that of the Canaanites, even into Zarephath, and the captivity of Jerusalem, which is in Zarephath, shall possess the cities of the south. And saviors shall come up on Mount Zion to judge the mount of Esau, and the kingdom shall be the Lord's. What those verses are talking about is Israel is going to just completely come in and take over Edom. They're going to possess all their land. Edom's going to be just completely destroyed, and it'll be like they never, ever existed. So, I mean, that's the message of the book of Obadiah. Destruction's coming. It's coming because the way you treated God's people, it's going to be a complete and total destruction. Yeah, Israel's going to, for a while, be punished, but they're going to turn back to me. And I'm going to continue to bless them, and they're going to possess their possessions. All right, now, again, this is not part of Obadiah, but just something that I came across I never had thought about before. Three sets of brothers in the Old Testament. Cain and Abel, Ishmael and Isaac, Esau and Jacob. Just think about those three sets of brothers for a minute. Cain and Abel, Ishmael and Isaac, Esau and Jacob. The younger brothers, in all three of those cases, that would be Abel, Isaac, and Jacob, represents the spiritual man. It represents the man that is concerned about the things of God. The older brothers, Cain, Ishmael, and Esau, represent the earthly man. So just think about it for a minute. Cain, again, the earthly man. Cain says, I don't need God's redemption. I can handle it on my own. So he didn't bring a lamb. or an animal sacrifice like his brother Abel did. He brought of the fruit of the ground, something that his hands had cultivated, planted, and harvested. And so he represents the man, the earthly man today, that says, I can work out my own salvation. I don't need God's salvation. I can do it on my own. Ishmael represents the man who persecuted the people of faith. Isaac was the person of faith, a spiritual man. And it tells us that, for example, when Isaac was weaned at the party that they threw for him, Ishmael was off on the side mocking. And you go to Galatians chapter 4, verse 29, I think it is, Paul talks about Ishmael persecuting Isaac. Again, the earthly man who has nothing to do with faith persecuting the one of faith. And then you come to Esau and Jacob. Esau represents the earthly man that trades the spiritual for the earthly. He trades the blessing of God for what he can have today. He traded his birthright for a pot of stew because he was hungry now. Who cares about what was going to happen in the future? All I'm concerned about is what happens now. And you put those pictures together, it paints a pretty good picture of what you might call carnal or earthly men today. Men that have nothing to say, I don't need the salvation of God. I don't need to live by faith. I'm going to live for the here and now. And if I have to make a choice between the blessings of God and what I can have here and now, I'm going to choose the here and now. Now, I don't have time, and I made myself a couple notes. The three spiritual brothers also represent three different things. Abel, and Isaac and Jacob represent different things in the spiritual man's life. I may preach a sermon on that one day soon, so you'll have to come back and get that. All right, thank you for being here tonight. Let's stand and have a word of prayer, and we'll be dismissed.